For this and all Clinical Updates podcasts, a 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit will be available for a limited time. To claim credit, view the slide deck associated with this podcast and complete the evaluation found in the slides. Speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with ineligible companies to disclose.
Welcome to Clinical Podcast. Today we have Dr. Rachel Peterson, psychologist. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, good morning.
And Zaida Sidderleaf, who's a PA with expertise in eating disorders. Hello, Zaida.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
And you both work at the Eating Disorders and Behavioral Related Eating Disorders Clinic in CentroCare. Today we are talking about bulimia nerviosa and binge eating disorder. And a quick reminder, we also have clinical podcasts along the lines of eating disorders with our fit, avoid unrestricted food intake disorder. I always have to read that one. And anorexia nervosa. So let's get into bulimia. How is bulimia different from binge eating?
So with binge eating disorder, I'll start with that because that kind of lays the framework for bulimia nervosa. Because with bulimia, there's always binging. So binge eating disorder is consuming a large amount of food in a short amount of time. Both of those are subjective measures, but generally we say under 60 minutes, and a large amount of food typically is two food items. And it's a pretty considerable larger portion than a normal meal portion. And feeling out of control during that episode is a must, kind of like anhedonia is a must with depression, right? It's a required diagnostic criteria. So that loss of control, large amount, short amount of time. Then they need to have three of the five following symptoms with the binge, right, which is feeling uncomfortably full after, emotionally feeling upset after, eating rapidly at a faster pace than their normal pace, feeling the kind of a feeling of like they need to hide or sneak, or actually hiding and sneaking when they're doing it. And then feeling not hungry prior to the binge occurring. So not hungry prior. And then those kinds of symptoms on three out of those five, if we're meeting three out of those five and we have the rest of it, there's also, of course, that it's occurring at least once a week for 3 months. And then it's causing quite a bit of distress. That there you have is binge eating disorder, which is actually the most common eating disorder in our country. And then the big thing with binge eating that distinguishes itself from bulimia is that there's no compensatory behaviors with binge eating disorder, right? They binge, but they do not kind of, if you will, undo the binge. Bulimia nervosa is when it now has evolved into the undoing of a binge. So it's everything that we just described with binge eating disorder, plus now there are compensatory mechanisms that are being used. And that can be anything from vomiting, laxatives, diuretics, diet pills, fasting, or compensatory exercise.
Now, I'm going to make a joke, but like all jokes have a bit of truth.
Oh,
so that's a question for you, Rachel. What she described, other than the compensatory mechanisms, is me when I make homemade pizza. I'm not hungry. I eat. I don't stop. My wife looks at me. She reminds me of my BMI and my age. And I hide and so on. How is that not a pathology? When is it a pathology?
I think when it's recurring, when there is functional impairment. So it's something that impeding life in some way, both work, play, social relationship.
So it's not just eating a lot. It's like, may I use the word grotesque of out of place or interrupting what you're doing? You just run out to get five hot dogs while you should be in a meeting or something like that.
It's more dysfunctional. It's causing stress. It's shame and guilt and anger and frustration and blame, and all those feelings are going to be things people will describe when it comes down to these episodes happening.
Yeah.
Who is the textbook case? How does it look?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think we see it across, I don't want to say all ages, because
anorexia, we think of a young girl, right? This is different.
There's a higher prevalence with binge eating disorder in males than which I think is, and there's still more prevalence in females than males with binge eating disorder. But of them all, there are more men that are more likely to have binge eating disorder.
Okay.
That's not the case with bulimia, but we might see more men seeking help for binge eating disorder compared to bulimia or binge eating or anorexia.
Okay.
But I would say most are, generally speaking, middle-aged, and I would say, generally speaking, females.
So it's a kind of a different profile.
I would say, yeah, and a huge history of dieting.
Okay.
Diet culture, dieting, weight cycling, weight loss. Oh, that's a big predisposing factor we see commonly.
I would have to ask, though, do we see them in the clinic, the women, the middle-aged women, because of the stigma with eating? Mm-hmm. And the women inherently just feel more shame because I shouldn't be eating this much.
Mm-hmm.
I need to look a certain way per society and culture. Mm-hmm. And as a woman, I shouldn't be eating as much, whereas I don't think men typically feel as much pressure.
It's interesting because culturally, things are changing. You know, the guy looking like roadkill while the women has to work and work and work to look good through marriage is kind of... sorry, that was a horrible example, but it's the first thing that came to mind.
I'm following you. You got it.
Okay. But all right. So if I understand you clearly, let me summarize. Binge eating and bulimia look very, very similar, aside from bulimia tending to be a younger female, and in binge eating could be males and could be more middle-aged, until they start having the compensatory mechanisms, and that's purely bulimia. Is that fair to say?
Right. And I think a big distinguishing factor in the personality types of bulimia nervosa and binge eating disorder, and Rachel can expand on this, bulimia nervosa, you're going to see much more of the kind of, let's see, impulsive, maybe volatile, maybe a little bit more reactive. They're more risk takers. They are, I mean, they're inducing vomiting, right? So they are going to be doing some dangerous things, and they're maybe not going to be. So you might see more kind of co-occurring mental illness, such as substance use disorder, borderline personality disorder, bipolar, things like that, that might be more likely to present with their risk of taking that risk of inducing the kind of undoing the compensatory mechanism.
Okay.
Our binge eating disorder patients are a lot more shame-based and a little bit more nervous and anxious, and they're never going to do that. That's too scary.
So they behave the same in a way, but they're different things altogether.
Right. Yes.
And generally speaking, a little more functional.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, these two are similar in presentation, but different kind of subset of patients. But can you have, let's take bulimia, right? Younger females. Can you have people... with, stupid question first, coexisting bulimia and anorexia, can such a thing happen, or having had one and had the other one?
So there's a subset of anorexia. There's two types of anorexia nervosa, which is one is the restrictive type and one is the binge purge type. So yes, there is technically anorexia nervosa, binge purge subtype, and bulimia nervosa. Rachel and I were actually just talking recently that it's pretty hard to distinguish between the two, but that ultimately, what we would boil it down to is that bulimia nervosa, it's easier to do with the anorexia nervosa binge purge type patients are more likely to be baseline restricting much more than bulimia nervosa. So they're maybe only keeping in 300 calories a day, then they're going to have a binge and a purge on top of that.
Wow.
Whereas bulimia nervosa, they're maybe eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner plus binging and purging. Do you see what the difference there? Right?
Oh, yes. Huge.
And so then the cognitive distortions with the ANBP subtype are going to be different because their starved brain is influencing their presentation, whereas bulimia nervosa might have a little bit difference there. So a big difference is that fear of waking, that body dysmorphia, where we're digging in to differentiate those two. But yes, we can also see that patients that have survived and recovered from anorexia also then go on to develop binge eating disorder as an adult because their brain has perceived that they have survived famine and therefore their food noise is really loud. And so now when I have actual access, unfettered access to food, now I binge. But they have this risk assessment piece from their anorexia history that maybe they do develop into that restrictive compensatory component where now they're binging because of the anorexia history, but that they're purging because of that anorexia history. They're too scared of that part. That's probably too complex of an answer there.
Progression,
but we can definitely see them evolve, eating disorders evolve over time, and that there are two different subsets that could have a binge and purge subset.
Now, along the lines of that, Rachel, would it be fair to say that somebody who has anorexia versus bulimia has more, I kind of think of the right word, I'm going to say autoflagellation, but low self-esteem or whichever, if you could tell me the term, because they put themselves in much higher harm's way. The others are I don't know. My understanding of what you're saying is that they don't like to eat so much, but they're not going to do something that is they know they could just flat out die. Is it more severe to have anorexia? What could you tell me of a difference?
Yes and no. So the potential for death, just to be very blunt, with AN is much higher just from starving. Like Zeta mentioned, your brain is just naturally going to be more depressed, more anxious. There's the rigidity there. There's the extent to which food and food-related behaviors takes over your life. You kind of lose that social capacity. Going to work might be really hard. Where with bulimia, there's just the personality profile that is, let's say, just really typical, not everybody, but typical, tends to be much more at risk for comorbid psychological factors. So additional self-harm, substance use, like Zeta said, some of the depression, anxiety, bipolar. So there tends to be a lot more co-occurring mental health diagnoses with...
This is bulimia.
With BN, yes.
Mm-hmm. And these are even in teenagers, or these mm-hmm. tend to be perhaps a little older sometimes than
even in teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Even in teenagers, yeah. Yeah, so that risk-taking factor. So it's hard to parse out, you know, which one psychologically tends to be worse.
Say that, go ahead.
Oh, I just like to add, I always like to put a plug in there that food insecurity is a huge risk factor for binge eater and bulimia nervosa. If you have a patient on food stamps, if you have a patient struggling with access, if you have to put in that Community Connect resource referral, be curious about their disordered eating history. It's something like 523% increased risk of an eating disorder with a history of insecurity.
Interesting, because the social profiling for anorexia is affluent family, and for bulimia then is or food stamp need. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. You probably could safely put those generalizations out there. And of course, not always, but generally speaking, yeah, I would say. And with binge eating disorder as well, that restricted environment then leads to binging is more likely.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, perhaps because I want to give a different spin to this, if there's such a different spin, for bulimia and for binge eating, you mentioned more kind of, I want to say, catastrophic or severe psychiatric comorbidities or drug use, etc., for binge eating. So could the binge eating, for example, be a consequence of drug use, for example, or bipolar disorder? And the next question is, because of this, does it get overseen or not diagnosed? You know, it's just another thing that piles up in the plethora of problems that these patients have.
I would say the biggest thing I see there is that psychotropic medications, specifically our atypical antipsychotics, olanzapine, Abilify, those guys, those can predispose patients that maybe had severe psychiatric illness, needed some kind of medication to stabilize. That causes weight gain. Olanzapine, literally, this is the joke, right? I see patients literally say, I crave cake. I need cake. I need to have sweets and sugar on those meds. Olanzapine is the most weight promoting of any of those atypical antipsychotics. And so that, I would say, is the most likely risk factor, more so that the underlying psychiatric illness is treated by medications that cause significant disturbances in weight, hunger cravings, that then can develop into an eating disorder. Now you have a predisposing psychiatric illness to something like bulimia nervosa. Now they've had such significant weight fluctuations. You throw substance use and a female in that mix, and now they have bulimia nervosa.
But it's such an interesting thing, because I'm thinking of that song, Baby, I Don't Know Why I Go to Extremes, right? I don't remember. Billy Joel. But it's like, it's almost like binge eating would be one of the manifestations of certain psychiatric conditions. So how can you tell apart that that's a standalone diagnosis which could get overseen versus just one of the manifestations of that diagnosis? Rachel, you might want to take that one.
That's a really good question. I think because one of the triggers for people to binge eat, so taking the bulimia part out of it, but just binge eating, I mean, people will report feeling lonely or sad or overwhelmed. And so, I mean, yeah, they can be suffering from depression just, you know, as a standalone thing and develop like that binge eating. And substance use could be part of that too. You know, they use substances and then they eat. And so teasing out, okay, so you have depression, is that being managed? And then when you're eating, what are you really looking for instead of that food? What else is it that's missing in your life that you're trying to fill with the food? So, I mean, they can be both there, but trying to address that mental health need that the food is trying to fill. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Say that, I wanted to ask you, we talked about this in anorexia. So bulimia, anorexia, let's say we have a straightforward, not straightforward, but easier than the family brings an underage family member, so on and so forth. Binge eating, you mentioned, could be older people. When should you start thinking about that, that perhaps is not a straightforward case? You're seeing a patient, and when should you be asking questions that leading into the diagnosis of binge eating for an adult, let's say?
For an adult?
Yes.
So I think the biggest thing is any history of dieting, right? Any history of diet culture, weight stigma, bias, discrimination, things like that are going to be a risk factor for that kind of shame-based eating to some degree. And so I know I work in weight management as well. So I know that is a big component. We screen for binge eating disorder at every weight management consult.
Okay.
So clinical standpoint, it's a easy thing to screen for. Do you feel like your eating's out of control? Do you consume large amounts of food on a frequent basis? Like two quick questions we could start screening for. And that's an easy way to start asking, because generally it is the number one most common eating disorder in our country. So anybody with obesity could be at risk for binge eating disorder.
Okay.
So I would say that suspicion of asking those questions is very low. Now, that's my job, so I am a little bit more probably liberal with that kind of thing. But I would say otherwise you'd be looking at, yeah, other psychiatric mental illness on their medical history, if that's a component, their age, their diet history, those kinds of factors would be things to also kind of ding in your head to be looking for.
And going similar to what I asked for anorexia, should all these patients in which you strongly suspect be referred to the weight management clinic?
To the eating disorder clinic. I mean,
eating disorder.
Absolutely, yeah. Our weight management providers are all trained in screening for binge eating disorder and then referring to eating disorders. So we do see a lot of crisscross between those referrals. But that if there is a concern distinctly for binge eating and patients are expressing this concern, referring just right to the eating disorder program, because that multidisciplinary approach is the gold standard with psych, dietitian, and medical approach. We are also be addressing weight simultaneously. You know, we just had a patient discharged from our program after losing 16% of his body weight, which was 71 pounds in a year and a half of eating disorder treatment, and is in recovery. So he got referred to us by weight management, and then we treated him for about a year and a half. And then he discharged from eating disorder treatment back to weight management in recovery and had reduced weight throughout that time and also worked on recovering from an eating disorder. So we really work hard to try to do those things simultaneously because patients deserve.
Theta, would you say that when you're initially talking to patients who are living in a larger body and are getting diagnosed with an eating disorder, so for people who don't know, Zeta always triages them first and then I end up seeing them or another psych provider sees them second. So we're kind of, you know, in the back end of things, that people feel really validated that their concerns around food and eating are legitimate. And it is an eating disorder, not just, oh, you have a problem with food and that's why you need to lose weight. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last question for you both. I want a quick top three. Let's start with Saida. If you have a patient and you say, this is not going to end up well, or the chances of not end up well, or this is going to be hard, etc. Give me your top from easiest to worst of the three diagnoses, anorexia with binge eating, bulimia, or binge eating, which is the worst to the most hopeful.
Oh, anorexia nervosa, binge purge type is the spooky scariest. Yeah.
Okay. And then?
Then you have the most scary outcomes. And then anorexia nervosa restrictive subtype. So AN takes the top one and two charts.
Sure.
Then it would be BN and then BED. So I added a fourth, but that's because I split up anorexia into the two, because I do think ANBP has that scariest and worst prognostic outcomes.
Rachel, do you defer or you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.